an outpouring of grief after basketball great Kobe Bryant dies in a helicopter crash.
Earlier today, Los Angeles, America, and the whole wide world lost a hero.
And China urges calm, even as it warns that a deadly virus is growing more contagious.
I think the main development now is that we see the central government getting very involved.
Plus, President Trump's defense team continues their case against impeachment. This is What's News from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Kim Gittleson. Let's get started. Now, before we update you on the latest on the deadly new coronavirus, here's what you missed. Basketball star Kobe Bryant and his 13-year-old daughter Gianna were among the 9 people who died in a helicopter crash in California yesterday. His death sent shockwaves around the world, with hundreds of fans gathering at the Staples Center, the home of the LA Lakers, to pay their respects.
He was the mayor of L.A. to me. And so, you know, like a lot of people are saying, today's the day that part of L.A. died.
It's like Magic, Kobe. They're Mount Rushmore of L.A. They are Mount Rushmore.
Everybody's in grief. Everybody's mourning. Everybody has respect for this man and his family and his daughter. It's painful.
Kobe was one of my favorite players. So to see that he's dead, it makes me sad.
Bryant was one of the greatest basketball players in NBA history, winning 5 championships with the Lakers, the only team he ever played for. Our columnist Jason Gay reflects on Bryant's legacy.
Really, from the beginning, he was somebody who seemed preternaturally equipped to play in the best league in the sport. He could do it all. I mean, that was one of his great gifts as a basketball player. He wasn't wedded to any one style. He could beat you inside, outside. He could beat you seemingly single-handedly in his prime. He was not a player who was specific to one kind of strategy, which just made him awfully tough to beat.
Bryant retired in 2016, and his life off the court was only just beginning.
He moved quickly into a couple other ventures. He started an investment fund, which was heavily involved in technologies. He won an Oscar for an animated short that was based around a poem that he had written about basketball. I mean, he was kind of, you know, pushing along in this polymath life of his. He wasn't going to do one thing. He wasn't going to be, you know, just a talking head on television or radio or something like that. He seemed to be interested in a whole bunch of things.
Bryant's daughter, Gianna, was a budding basketball star herself. He called her Mambacita, a nod to the nickname he once gave himself, Black Mamba. They'd been heading to one of her games before the crash. For more on Bryant's legacy, you can head to our website. A claim by former Trump National Security Advisor John Bolton could scramble the impeachment trial. In a draft of his forthcoming book, Bolton alleges that President Trump told him in August that he wanted to keep aid to Ukraine frozen until the country conducted investigations into Democrats. That included former Vice President Joe Biden and his son. The president denied Bolton's allegations, and Bolton's lawyer said the book draft was submitted to the National Security Council for standard review and that details were improperly disclosed. We'll have more on today's impeachment proceedings later in the show. Now, our main story. A deadly virus is continuing to spread. Today, China confirmed that at least 2,700 people had contracted the unnamed coronavirus and that at least 80 people had died. There have been 3 additional confirmed cases in the United States and a handful of cases in Europe and other countries outside of China. Our Beijing bureau chief, Jonathan Cheng, has been directing our coverage of the outbreak. So, Jonathan, what's the latest today?
Well, I think the main development now is that we see the central government getting very involved and wanting to show that it's on the front lines of this. So we have the premier, the number 2 in the country, go down to Wuhan today. Prior to that, the response was almost entirely led by Wuhan officials and by Hubei province officials. And the view generally is that they haven't done a very good job. So far, you know, that means that there's someone to blame. They can blame the provincial and municipal authorities, but now that the central authorities are taking, direct role on this, they're going to be responsible for this as well. So we'll see whether or not their injection into the situation here is going to make much of a difference.
And we've seen that the number of reported cases has increased dramatically over the past few days. Do we know why that is?
Well, I think the number of cases is linked probably just to diagnosis in many ways. I mean, when the disease first appeared, nobody knew how to even check whether or not you had this new coronavirus or not, or whether you just had the flu or you had something else. And so part of it is simply that we're able to measure what we weren't able to measure before. But a large part of it, too, is that a lot of people from Hubei province have already started to scatter all across the country for this Lunar New Year holidays.
Haven't there also been reports that the virus is more contagious than we initially thought?
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's a lot of disagreement and a lot of research that still needs to be done. The virus can pass from human to human. We know that much. And then from there, the question is, how many people can one infected patient spread it to? And how long is the transmission chain? I mean, if person A passes it to person B, can person B pass it on to C, and so on? And how easily is it transmitted? Do the two people need to be very, very, very close contact, or is it just a matter of being in the same room or something like that? I think people are still trying to figure all of these details out, and I don't think there are any firm answers.
And the virus has also continued to spread. We've now had a total of 5 confirmed cases in the U.S. What sorts of restrictions have we seen from places neighboring China, like Hong Kong?
Yeah, so the disease has spread quite widely now. And I think what that has done is it's led a lot of these countries to really impose restrictions on travelers coming from China, especially travelers who have been to Wuhan or to Hubei province. Just today on Monday, we had Macau, Mongolia, you know, these are all neighboring mainland China here. So they sort of have direct contact with mainland China, you could say, have all basically blocked Chinese citizens from traveling there.
And this is all coming, as you mentioned, during the Chinese Lunar New Year. What will the impact of all of this be on China's economy, which has already been showing signs of strain?
Yeah, well, we can already see that travel over the New Year period was down something like, I think, 40%. Depends whether you look at the rail, bus, plane, but a pretty significant drop in travel. And of course, the question is how long this lasts for and how severe it becomes. And so you've now seen a couple of cities. Suzhou was the first. That's a city near Shanghai. It has a lot of foreign investment, a lot of factories, a lot of business activity. They basically extended their Lunar New Year and told businesses, you're not opening until, you know, such and such a date. And Shanghai, we've just learned, has also extended its Lunar New Year as well. And the whole country has, actually, but Shanghai's gone even further. So that basically means that for several weeks now, you're not going to get any economic activity that's not, you know, directly coronavirus related here. And when we get back to normal, I think it's anyone's guess. So if you're an economist, you're trying to calculate this, but there's so many assumptions and so many unknowns. And, you know, China's economy was already slowing, so this is definitely not going to help. And it is a concern from a global economic point of view.
You can find all of our continuing coverage of the new coronavirus and efforts to contain it up on WSJ.com. On to markets. We're going to focus on Apple today. A year ago, it looked like shares in the tech giant were headed for a slump with slowing iPhone sales and weak demand in China. But instead, investors were treated to one of the biggest one-year stock rallies in history. Like, big. Apple added over $725 billion to its value last year. That's more than the entire market value of Facebook. Markets reporter Joe Wallace has more on what led to the remarkable rally.
Well, as you say, Apple's share price has more than doubled in a year. And what's driving this rally is really expectations about the new iPhone, which is set to be released in the fall. And it'll be the first iPhone that's enabled with 5G technology. And analysts think that because this will make the iPhone faster, that could lead to the first rise in iPhone sales since the 2018 fiscal year. There's also a lot of enthusiasm about rising sales of things like AirBuds, the wireless headphones, as well as services, which some analysts think will make Apple a kind of higher margin business. But there is some disagreement about this. Some investors have sold down some of their stakes. They think there's too much exuberance about Apple's shares. Others have added to their stakes because they think that Apple is really becoming more of a service company. And as kind of investors wrestle with this debate about whether Apple is a hardware company or a services company, we can probably expect some more jolts in its share price over the next few months.
And here's what else we're paying attention to today. As I mentioned earlier, President Trump's defense team will continue their case against impeachment. The team conducted an abbreviated session on Saturday. From Washington, Rebecca Ballhouse has more.
They argued that there is no evidence that he pushed Ukraine's president for an investigation of his political rival in exchange for aid that the U.S. would send to Ukraine. And they said that Democrats were relying really on just circumstantial evidence to make their case rather than firsthand accounts.
Today, the president's team will present the bulk of their case, including addressing Democratic demands for John Bolton and others to testify.
The president's lawyers are certainly trying to persuade Republican senators who have said that they're on the fence about a witness vote, that more witnesses and more evidence are not necessary. Their main goal is in wrapping this up as quickly as possible, and they don't want to further prolong this trial.
We'll have the latest for you in our afternoon edition. Finally,
I'm the bad guy. Duh.
If you haven't heard of her or heard her music yet, chances are after last night's Grammys, you'll be hearing a lot more of 18-year-old Billie Eilish. She swept the music industry's annual awards last night, becoming the youngest artist ever to win Album of the Year. She also won the Song of the Year, Record of the Year, and Best New Artist Awards. Many artists during the night also paid tribute to Kobe Bryant. Alicia Keys and Boyz II Men sang It's So Hard to Say Goodbye to Yesterday in tribute.
It's so hard to say goodbye to yesterday.
That's what's news from the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
We love you, Kobe. Boyz II Men. Thank you so much.